from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome on this Tuesday, July 3rd, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at the interesting developments in the EU over the last couple of weeks, not just last couple of weeks. Of course, we had the competition. It looked like it was going to fracture Angela Merkel's coalition that took her months to put together. Looked like it was going to fracture over the issue of open borders and immigration. The same issue that is at the forefront here in America. We're going to show you what this looks like as it's playing out in Europe. This is the existential fight for our civilization that is happening right now. This is the globalists who are trying to take down not only our country, but they're pretty far along the way, much further along the way, I think, in the EU, although things are catching up rapidly here in the United States with our open borders that remain open in spite of all the controversy. Wide open. And we're going to also talk about the moral case for why there should be a wall. Of course, we've had the Pope jump in and say, we don't build walls, we build bridges. It's immoral for a government to have a wall. Well, is it? Is that really the case? We'll take a look at the biblical history. We have a scholar who weighed in on this, and we're going to talk about his position on that. But we're also going to talk about the attacks on ICE and the efforts to try to abolish ICE. Are they really predators, or are they protecting us? President Trump says they're protecting us. I agree with President Trump on this, and we're going to tell you why. We're going to give you evidence of what is happening here. Meanwhile, we got NPR saying they're just mighty munchkins. The dreaded MS-13 is nothing to fear. This is just a bunch of bad high school boys and girls who are taking it out on their high school rivals. You know, with like machetes and turning their girlfriends into prostitutes. Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah. No, it's beyond that. Yeah, they have pushed a lot of them through that are very young, and they are in high school, and they're showing us what they're going to do when they get out. They have deliberately selected minors to come in. MS-13 has. It's not exclusively limited to young people, obviously. But they have pushed young people in because they know they can game the system. So we're going to take a look at that. We're also going to take a look at the back and forth about Supreme Court nominations. When I reported this, everybody was talking about the lead individual, said, well, it looks like maybe we're going to have Mike Lee, but that really wasn't the guy that everybody was talking about. The guy that everybody was talking about was Kavanaugh. He's got a lot of friends in Washington. He's a big part of the Washington establishment. He has very close connections to the Bush administration. And it's like, whoa. When I saw that, I said, let's please find somebody else. I'm looking down the list, and I see a young woman in her 40s, and she clerked for Justice Scalia. And now there's a lot of reports coming out, a lot of rumors in the White House staff and everything. Of course, President Trump is still looking at people, but he's going to make his decision in less than a week. And I'll tell you why this is a great pick coming up, the lady that is rumored to be one of the top two. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to give you some reaction from Cokie Roberts, who covers the Supreme Court again for NPR, ABC News. I think it's ABC she does reports for. It's one of those big three establishment dinosaur media companies. And we'll show you why they're dinosaur media companies. She says, well, President Trump, give me a break. He doesn't have the temperament to pick somebody with judicial temperament. That's her point. And I find it interesting. Also, the comments pushing back against her from former Governor Chris Christie, talking about how the Democrats are always talking about how we have to find a moderate. He goes, why isn't the Democrats never are concerned about picking moderates? We're going to take a look at that. And we'll also have some updates on what's going on with some of the Obama alumni. Now we have former Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner has now become a loan shark. I'll give you some details of that. That's one of the things that really bothers me, the destruction of the usury laws. That is actually criminal. We'll stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Tuesday, July 3rd, 2018. I'm David Knight, and we're going to get into borders. We're going to talk about U.S. borders, but we're also going to talk about what's going on in the European Union. Very, very important. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court picks that are before President Trump. And before we do, I just want to point out yet again the fake news, ABC. Now, 7 months after you had Brian Ross report that Michael Flynn was prepared to testify. This is back in December. He said, if you remember, he said that Michael Flynn was going to turn on the president, and he was going to say that Trump directed him to contact the Russians as president-elect and not as candidate. And quite frankly, I'm not really sure what difference that would have made anyway. I mean, as a candidate or as a presidential-elect, especially as presidential-elect, why wouldn't you be allowed to talk to ambassadors from a foreign country to find out what the situation is? I mean, that's just part of intelligence. It's part of establishing relationships. We've had FBI agents say Flynn should never have been charged, that there was no deception involved, there was nothing illegal that was done. But of course, it's an invented story by Brian Ross at ABC News. Been there for quite some time, and now he has been quietly let go. So this is he got put on suspension for a while, but now he is gone. Maxine Waters, meanwhile, says she is done with quote nice guy politics. What she got up her? What she got on her mind here? If she's not going to be Mr. Nice Guy anymore. I hadn't noticed the nice guy politics there. So, step it up. Please step it up. It's working really well for our side. Thank you, Maxine. You know, these red hens are starting to come home to roost. Here's another example. Remember just a few months ago, the big attack against Scott Pruitt? They hate him at the EPA because he says, hey, if you're going to do policy, you better be prepared to show us the data that you're basing the policy on. And again, as I've said before, I worked with an organization that fought for a long time to try to get Michael Mann's emails involved in the ClimateGate emails with the East Anglia University, where they were saying, hey, the data doesn't support our models. We've got to find some way to hide the decline in temperatures and so forth and so on. So they're conspiring and talking about the problems that they have with real data. So he said, well, show us your data, because you've published your papers. We've already had policy that's been made based on your conclusions. We would like to see the raw data. Are you guys really rigging stuff here? They fought us on that. And so now Scott Pruitt comes in the EPA and he says, you're going to have to show data on this. You're going to have to do real science. It's called peer review. It's called transparency. It's called honesty and not deception. That's why they hate him. And so the narrative from the left was Scott Pruitt, look at this. He's got people as bodyguards. Yeah, he's had a lot of death threats. We just had somebody arrested yesterday for a death threat against FCC chairman, Pai. And this is happening all the time. We just had somebody arrested for a death threat against Rand Paul as well. And then here's Scott Pruitt. It was such a scandal for the left that he needed to have protection. Oh, he shouldn't have protection. This guy is wasting money. We need to throw him out of office and so forth. Now he's become the latest Trump official to be harassed at a restaurant, getting the red hen treatment. But as we look at the Obama officials that are here, remember when we had Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner? And remember when he was complaining about all the people who are predatory lenders and so forth? He lobbied against capping $165 million in executive bonuses at AIG while it was taking TARP money. And he is now the president of New York's Warburg Pincus. It's a private equity firm. They own a predatory lender called Mariner Finance. This is a story from the Washington Post. Well, what this is, we call him a predatory lender. What does that mean? Well, let me define for you what a predatory lender does. They raised $550 million through bond sales last year. Now, when they get their money through bond sales, they are picking up money for about 4 or 5%. What do they lend it out at? 36%? Except in some places where there are some state laws still on the books against usury rates. But that's not the case typically. We used to have usury laws that defined it as loan sharking. Only the mafia would do this type of stuff, charging people 20, 30%, sometimes more on some of these credit cards. And we said, that's criminal. People can never get out of debt with that. And it's a common theme with a lot of movies from the 50s, 60s, 70s. You see somebody get into gambling debts with mob. The mob charges them 20, 30%, maybe more. They can never get out of debt. Then they wind up getting their legs broken or worse from the mafia, destroying their lives. And only organized crime would do that. Except that now we have the banksters, and they are the most organized criminals in the world. As we had inflation run away under Jimmy Carter, they said, well, everything is really high now. You know, we're charging. I remember when I first, our first home, right after I graduated, we went to Houston. My wife and I, we had a 13% fixed loan. And so they said, we're going to take away the usury laws. And the sky's the limit. And they have never put them back on. Throughout all the years of the Obama administration where they were charging 0% interest to the big banks, they were still charging massive amounts of money. You know, what's your return when you're getting your money for 0%? To infinity and beyond. You know, you divide by zero, you get an infinite number, right? I don't know how you calculate the return on investment when you have no cost and you get to loan it out. It's just free money to these people. So what is Timothy Geithner's predatory lender doing? Well, here's an example. One guy gets a check in the mail, check out of the blue. Here's a check for you. You need some money? Just cash this check. Take it to the bank. And he looks at the fine print. It says it's going to be 33%. And he goes, oh, no. I'm not going to do that. But then he got into trouble. His 2005 Chevy pickup was in shop. He didn't have enough money to pay for the repairs. He needed the truck to get to work, to get the kids to school. So this 56-year-old heavy equipment operator in Nashville pulled out the check in April of last year and cashed it. Within a year, Timothy Geithner's firm, Mariner Finance, sued him for $3,221.27, including the original $1,200, plus an additional $800 that a company representative later persuaded him to take, plus hundreds of dollars in processing fees, insurance, other items, plus interest. It didn't matter that he had already made a few payments. They're just going to accelerate. He said, I would have been cheaper for me to go out and get money from the mob. Probably would have. As one former manager trainee who used to work there said, and this is the takeaway, folks, it's basically a way of monetizing poor people. It's theft. It's abuse of poor people. This is why Jesus Christ beat these people at the temple. Only time he ever got violent with people. People like this. People like Geithner. Nothing makes me madder than to see these types of greedy bankers. Where are the people on either side? The Democrats who say they want to stand up for the poor people. This is a Democrat with the Obama administration. Where are the people like Chuckie Schumer? Oh, that's right. He works for the bankers. Pushing this stuff through. Where are all these people talking about how they're going to stand up for the poor? No, you won't find them doing anything. You're certainly not going to find it in the Republican Party. They're not going to call these people in. They're not going to put back into place usury laws to protect us from exploitation and theft. These people are mobsters of the worst sort. When we come back, I'm going to play you a little bit of an excerpt done by some courageous congressman in talking about what it is like in Washington to go there, the pressures on them by the establishment of both parties. They put together a thing called the Swamp. Stay with us. I think you're going to find it very interesting. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome come back, we're going to take a look at what it's really like in Capitol Hill. We got a series called The Swamp, put together by some, New American calls them courageous congressmen. I think they are courageous for speaking out and saying what it's really like there. We got that coming up for you. Before we get to that, I want to talk about what's going on with the Supreme Court picks, because President Trump has been interviewing people. He's got a few more to interview. He has committed to a deadline of next Monday to name a nominee. And, of course, he had a list of 25 people. That's never been done by a presidential candidate before. Nice transparency with that. And as we go down that list, one of the people that was on the list was Mike Lee, senator from Utah, a GOP senator, a friend of Mitt Romney, by the way, and a never-Trumper. And we have now had, reported by True Pundit, people in the Trump administration say he's not going to be the choice. Mike Lee is out of the running as a top candidate to replace Kennedy on the Supreme Court. They said Ted Cruz is also pushing President Trump to pick Mike Lee. But Trump is looking at this, as one insider said to True Pundit, the president has a long memory. There are many qualified candidates on the list who didn't try to take his knees out before the election. Remember that? Remember when Mike Lee was doing that? He isn't ignoring the fact that you got people like Mark Levin also pushing Mike Lee. Mark Levin, who was also a never-Trumper until very, 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 very late in the race. He got on the bandwagon. Mark Levin absolutely hated President Trump. And he's pushing Mike Lee as well. It was Lee who tried to railroad Trump's candidacy on the floor of the GOP convention in Cleveland, staging an 11-state coup to have Trump's delegates swapped out to Ted Cruz. That Lee tried to swap out the delegates to Cruz. Cruz is pushing Lee for Supreme Court, and Mark Levin was cheering them all on the radio. Yeah, this is so now. Don't think it's going to happen. And I think it's a good thing. I've seen Mike Lee say some good things. I've seen him say some horrible things when he has talked about policy. Quite frankly, he can be, kind of like Mark Levin, honestly. These are the people that most people believe are the two top picks. Of course, one of them is Brett Kavanaugh. He was the one that was being pushed quite a bit by the establishment in Washington. He's got a lot of friends in D.C. He's deeply embedded in the establishment. Well, that's not a good idea, is it? And when I saw his name on the list and I saw the people who were pushing him, I said, oh, please, I hope that President Trump doesn't take their advice. I hope he is wiser than that. I looked down the list and I saw Amy Barrett, and it said that she clerked for Antonin Scalia. I said, that's the one. Go for her. And fortunately, I'm sure President Trump is not listening to me. But looks to be like that might be the case. A lot of people are saying that right now. You're going to have somebody who is a real conservative, not a Bush conservative, not a GOP establishment conservative, not a never-Trumper like Mike Lee. You're going to need to have somebody who is also going to be able to have the kind of identity presence, quite frankly, that Amy Barrett has. That's the world that we live in right now. She's female. She's young. It's going to be hard for the Democrats to come against her just because of that. I mean, they play that game. You got to play it back. And so people who are looking at this say that President Trump, people who are familiar with his thinking, say he's likely to be turned off by Kavanaugh's former work with Bush and his marriage to Bush's former secretary. He also maintains extensive social ties with former members of the Bush administration. He's got a lot of well-placed allies around the Capitol. Let me tell you something. If President Bush puts this guy in, he's going to go the way of David Souter in no time at all. Another Bush appointee. I think it was his dad who put him in. Barrett, by contrast, is a newcomer to the federal bench. She was elevated to the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals just 8 months ago. She was a law clerk to Antonin Scalia. That's a great recommendation right there. Somebody who is a constructionist. In other words, does the Constitution as written mean anything? Does the law as written mean anything? See, that's really where the battle is right now. It shouldn't be, are we going to have a male seat or a female seat or a leftist seat or a rightist seat or a liberal conservative, whatever, a white, a black, a brown, whatever. It should be, do you believe that we're going to take the law as it's written and be a referee, or are you going to invent the law? Are you going to say, this is what I decided, and this is the law of the land? And we're going to hear a lot about that, because Roe v. Wade is going to be there, and that's the catchphrase. It's the law of the land. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. And the whole idea that the Supreme Court is writing law tells us that we don't, we're in a post-constitutional era. And the whole idea that we don't reverse Supreme Court decisions is nonsense. It's happened all the time. And just remind the liberals one more time that it was a filmmaker who did a movie called The Spirit of 76, about the 1776 revolution against the British. And because the government wanted us to go into World War I under Woodrow Wilson, they tried to censor it. He didn't censor it. They put him in jail, gave him a massive fine, and they appealed it all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, you don't have First Amendment protection as a filmmaker. And that stood until it was reversed by the Supreme Court in the 1950s. So don't talk to me about law of the land. We had a law of the land. It was called the First Amendment. They chose not to honor it for four or five decades. Anyway, when we look at this, they say, although her experience as a judge is limited, sources close to the process have compared her to Elena Kagan. Not ideologically similar, of course, but they both spent a significant portion of their career in the legal academy, where they generated large bodies of scholarship. Both are considered rigorous thinkers who engaged practical, if highly technical, and legal issues. And when we look at the CNN is saying she is the dream pick for President Trump. Like I said, it's going to be easier for him to get her through. She checks all the boxes in terms of being a strict constructionist, in terms of being a conservative, and then she checks these other boxes. She is a woman. She is a mother of seven. She is young. She's in her mid-40s. She is a person of faith. She is reliably conservative, particularly on social issues. And as CNN said, President Trump is increasingly intrigued about selecting the first female conservative Supreme Court justice, because we had Sandra Day O'Connor put in there by President Reagan, and she was not a conservative. Good riddance. I'm glad that she took retirement early. She was confirmed, Amy Barrett, was confirmed by the Senate to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in October of 2017. She received 55 votes, including from Democrats Joe Manchin, West Virginia, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, Tim Kaine of Virginia, Hillary's running mate, as well as several moderate Republicans like Shelley Moore Capito, Susan Collins, and Lisa Murkowski. Now, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski are also out there saying, oh, we can't do anything about Roe v. Wade and so forth. It's going to be very difficult for them to push against her, as well as these Democrats, when just about 7 months ago, 8 months ago, they voted in favor of her as a judge. Now, they can say, well, this is a different situation. Nevertheless, they already voted for her. But now you've got the Democrats out there saying, I don't know. I think she's too Christian. She's in a small group with other Catholics. That looks really culty to me. I think she's got to be disqualified. That kind of bigotry is what we're going to say. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
I've got a couple more things to say about the Supreme Court pick, and I want to play a clip for you from Cokie Roberts, where she's going back and forth with Chris Christie a little bit here on mainstream media. But as I said in the last segment, you've got Amy Coney Barrett. She clerked for Antonin Scalia. She was passed with 55 votes out of the Senate just last fall. Several Democrats voted for her. But even though she looks good on paper, even though she was just passed by the same people who are going to be judging if President Trump picks her, we've now had the progressives come out and, as National Review puts it, deploy religious ignorance and bigotry to try to stop her appointment. She'd be the perfect person for President Trump. She'd be a constructionist, be a great pick. And, of course, he is still looking at people. And he's not going to make his decision until next Monday. But I think it's interesting to see what they're already starting to do. If you remember, as I said, she had the confirmation hearings in the fall last year. And when she was being confirmed for circuit court, Dianne Feinstein famously said, "When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you." And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country. Oh, there's no dogma on the left? I'm sorry. What is all this stuff about Roe v. Wade being established law? There's no dogma on the left? We've had a lot of dogma imposed on this court, especially by people like Kennedy, who just decided that, well, because I think this is a good thing, even though I don't have the authority to do it, and even though I'm not even elected by anybody, I'm just going to join with the majority and say, yeah, we kind of took a poll amongst ourselves and decided this is going to be the policy. We're going to define marriage. And we're going to find it like this, even though we don't have, the federal government doesn't have that policy, power to do that. And the Congress hasn't even made that, the elected representatives. But we're going to do it. We're going to declare what that's going to be. Same thing with mandated health care. Right, we're going to make that decision and so forth. And as they point out in National Review, when Dianne Feinstein said that, a lot of people felt that it was very crude, that it was very direct. A lot of progressives said that they know, including Harvard Law School professor Noah Feldman, blanched at the obvious religious targeting, as National Review says. But then they said there's something much more subtle that's happening right now. There's a New York Times article attacking her, written by Laurie Goodstein. The insinuation is that there's something not quite right with her faith. And you won't believe how they come after her. She's a Catholic. But she belongs to, quote, listen to the innuendo here, a small, tightly knit Christian group called People of Praise. And they have a problem with this. Laurie Goodstein at the New York Times has a problem with this. She describes it kind of like a cult. She said group leaders give direction on important decisions, including whom to date or marry, where to live, whether to take a job or buy a home, and how to raise children. Oh, really? Really? A lot of evangelical Christians be familiar with that. It's called a small group. You basically get together with people and you invite people to comment on decisions. You seek other people's advice. There's some wisdom in that, isn't there? You know, the wounds of a friend are great, right? This is what's called a small group. They don't just study the Bible. They have deep friendships. They seek advice for living their lives, including, yes, advice on dating, marriage, career, so forth, how to raise your kids, all these things. You seek advice from other people. That's what you do if you're wise. And they say a lot of evangelicals and even Catholics like Barrett work with more formal parachurch organizations. A lot of times these organizations not only do things like founding schools, but they also create more formal social networks, allow people to help other members in need. They might house members who need places to stay or live when they move into a community. They might appoint leaders who help to direct the group, provide biblical counsel to its members. You know what? This is what democracy in America used to look like. Alexis de Tocqueville talked about that. He said, Americans, and this is the early 1800s, he was a French writer who came to observe America, wrote quite a bit about it. It's called Democracy in America. You should read it. You should see what America looks like under the Constitution, under the values that America used to once embrace. He said they don't look to government to solve their problems like we do in France. He said instead they form voluntary associations. They create their own schools. They educate their own children. When they see a need, they pull together the community, and they do it there at the local community. Oh, but the New York Times has a problem with it. See, only the government, only the federal government should be able to do stuff like that. Only the federal government should have schools, right? All schools should report to the federal government. And they should get all their curriculum from the federal government. They should tell them everything to do. And so then you've got Cokie Roberts, as they're talking about President Trump. She says Trump is not capable of really making a Supreme Court appointment. He's not capable of judging somebody's temperament. This is what she said on Sunday. Let's play that clip, video 6.
Well, it doesn't seem there's any indication that he's going to choose someone who's more moderate, like Justice Kennedy.
No, I don't think so. And by the way, you know, I kind of laugh about this a little bit as a Republican. Like, who's the moderate on the Democratic side that has been selected lately? I mean, you might be able to argue Justice Breyer every once in a while, but certainly not, you know, Kagan or Ginsburg or Sotomayor.
President Clinton thought Ginsburg was, he was
good luck.
He was unhappy about that. But I think the notion of Donald Trump judging somebody's temperament is somewhat odd. And I'm not sure that that's something he's able to do. I think that it's going to be very much advice coming from people in the Senate.
And Matt, do Democrats really have any power to defeat Trump's nominee?
Well, this is an exclamation point of why elections have consequences.
Right, exactly.
And the president has a complete right to nominate a conservative judge to the court. That's what, I mean, the Democrats had that right when they held the presidential office.
That's right. Cokie Roberts doesn't like it, but we had an election, Cokie. I know it wasn't the gal that you supported, but we had an election. And now you're going to have to come out. If President Trump picks Barrett, not only is he going to get a constructionist, but he's going to get somebody that the Democrats just voted for. People like Hillary Clinton's running mate just voted for her. Now, it's going to be kind of awkward for him in just a couple of months to have to reverse himself. But they're putting pressure on Schumer. And, of course, they don't like her because they think she might be Christian. Who knows? That's going to be a disqualification. You know, it wasn't disqualification for Kagan that she had been an advocate for Obamacare in the Obama administration, and then he appoints her to fill a vacancy. And oh, by the way, when they bellyache all the time about how close we are to an election, it's about the same amount of time that it was when Obama appointed Kagan and they put her in office. It was a midterm election. It was about the same number of months away. She had a conflict of interest on Obamacare, and she did not recuse herself, you know, kind of like Rosenstein. As she was going through, of course, she genuflexed to Roe v. Wade as appropriate, as is required by everybody. That is the litmus test from the left. As I said before, you know, settled law. Well, the Supreme Court thought that it was settled law that a filmmaker didn't have First Amendment rights, and that was settled law for about 4 or 5 decades. It was settled law that you had to return escaped slaves to their masters, a famous Dred Scott decision. Supreme Court is frequently wrong and frequently reverses itself. So it's never settled, and they don't write law. They shouldn't, anyway. Lindsey Graham, however, saying on Roe v. Wade, you don't overturn precedent unless there's a good reason. Maybe the good people of South Carolina could overturn Lindsey Graham at some point. We can only hope. We can only hope. And then let's play the clip from President Trump, because he said he's got a couple more people he's going to be looking at. Here's President Trump.
In the morning, during the morning, I interviewed and met with 4 potential justices of our great Supreme Court. They are outstanding people. They are really incredible people in so many different ways, academically and every other way. And I had a very, very interesting morning. So between the president of Mexico and also the, I guess you would call him the president-elect, but I think he's going to...
All right, President Trump, one name you got to remember, Barrett. We'll be right back. We're going to tell you what the swamp looks like from the people who live there. Welcome back. We've got a video I want to play for you. It's part of a series. It's being put together by some congressmen talking about what life in Washington up against the establishment is really like. And they name names. So we're going to give you a little excerpt from one of these. They've got a series of these that they've put together so far. We're going to have that in just a moment. And then we're going to get into what's happening in Europe, because I think it's very important to take a look at that fight over the borders as well. Because, folks, we're fighting a global war. This is a strategy that is being put against us and the European Union at the same time. That push to consolidate all of the European nations into one position to overthrow their borders and so forth. You have to understand, sometimes it's easier to see what's going on when you look at it happening over there and see what's happening across the pond, if you will. But before we do, real quickly, we're celebrating our independence from the Europeans as the UK is about to declare their independence, hopefully, with Brexit, if they're going to go through with this. We don't know. We got Theresa maybe as prime minister, as Nigel Farage calls her. But we had our Declaration of Independence. We're going to celebrate that tomorrow. And as part of the celebration, we got a super sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Second American Revolution, 4th of July super sale. We got free shipping store-wide. We've got 50% off many of our most popular products. Things like Brainforce Plus, my favorite supplement that we have there. Actually, this not only do the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com fund this program, Brainforce Plus makes this possible for me. I couldn't get up at 25 or 6 to 4 and do this every day if I didn't have Brainforce Plus. That's 50% off with free shipping. Also, we have Silver Bullet, $9.95 with free shipping. While supplies last, DNA Force Plus, 50% off with free shipping. A very expensive product for us to produce. That is a big dollar savings. And speaking of big dollar savings, here's a couple of big ticket items that you'll find as part of this 4th of July sale. We've got the Alexa Pure Breeze, which is a great air filter. We use this in my home. Now, $100 off with free shipping. And the InfoWars Life Select Storable Food, a 3-month supply, you can get that 50% off with free shipping. And that is significant. When you get free shipping on a heavy item like that, that is a big saving. So take a look at the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. It's part of our July super sale. We really do appreciate your support. All right, let's play a little bit about how most people think laws are written. Remember this? The Schoolhouse Rock? Play just a little bit of that. I'm a Bill. Video 3.
You sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill.
That's the way it's supposed to work, right?
It's a long, long journey to the Capitol City. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
That's right. Yeah, if we had Congress actually writing laws, Congress doesn't even bother to make bills into laws anymore. They just create bureaucracies and tell them, you write the rules. And then when they write the rules and they accuse you of violating your rules, you don't have any due process because you have just violated a civil rule, not a law. So you don't have a presumption of innocence. You don't have protection against excessive fines. You don't have any kind of due process. And that's the pretense under which they can do civil asset forfeiture. So that's the idealistic thing. That's what the kids are told is how our government works. But let's hear from some people who are actually there. Some congressmen who got elected. You got Representative Thomas Massie, Republican of Kentucky, as well as some other people there. You got Representatives Dave Bratt, Tom Garrett of Virginia, Ken Buck of Colorado, Rod Blum of Iowa, Ted Yoho of Florida. They're showing people what happens behind the scenes in Congress, they said. And they've got a series that they call The Swamp. The Swamp. It could also be called the Deep State, although this is not the hidden deep state. This is just the swampy bureaucracy that is there. You know, when Christopher Wray said, I don't really know what the deep state is. It's kind of like when the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia did his tour and somebody asked him about Wahhabism. And he goes, I do not know what you mean by that. Christopher Wray said, I don't know what you mean by the deep state. Well, the deep state is a bureaucracy, but it's also the hidden bureaucracy. This is the bureaucracy that is elected. However, we don't typically see how it works, but these people who have to work with it do. And they wrote a series called The Swamp. Here's a taste of that series.
I'm not a career politician, and I don't want to be a career politician. And I think one of the problems in this town is there's too many damn career politicians.
This is pretty incredible. The House Majority Leader is fighting for his political life against Tea Party challenger Dave Bratt.
It's not about Dave Bratt winning tonight. It's about returning the country to constitutional principles.
The machine said, no, you can't run for that seat. And I said, I don't understand this machine thing.
Right when I got here, the orientation was just unbelievable in the sense that we were being trained like some kind of animal.
The Senate is basically an incumbent protection racket.
graveyards of people who hate Macbeth. Bastards who thought the world couldn't do without them, and the band played on. Being a businessman from the private sector coming here, are you kidding me? It's like from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Did you eat the Colorado brownie I gave you?
What happens when people who hate big government take over D.C.?
Well, we can always point to that. I just want you to know around here, we don't reward bad behavior. This is bullshit. You know, I'm a grown adult who's accomplished something in life. I don't need you telling me what is right or wrong.
Most of my colleagues are afraid of losing. That's their biggest fear.
He has to have a victory.
Really?
At what point did any one person become more important than what was the best for individuals in this nation to fulfill their individual dreams?
I'd heard about people losing their seats on committees as a result of not voting the right way.
People think this is politics. Politics is just a superstructure.
And I often said, if it were a company, I'd have quit. Unbelievable. You don't need the rest of us. They make every single decision at the top.
Peter Pelosi and I had a...
And the system's not broken. And there are good people here. The system's been poisoned.
As soon as you want something, they got you. As soon as you want something, you now become part of the swamp. That's the way the game is played around here.
That's right. You heard what that guy said. He said, if this was a company, I would have quit. All the decisions are made by one or two people there. And you see the clip of Chuck Schumer saying, well, Nancy Pelosi and I have decided. Maybe they got Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell to decide with them. Yeah. They said, as soon as you want something from these people, they've got you. Oh, you need a favor, don't you? It is not only a swamp, it is a disgusting mafia. That's why I say, you know, you look at this series, and you should look at this series. We need to understand that our problems are not going to be solved in Washington. They will never give us our liberty back. They will never give us our Constitution back. We have to cut them off. We have to cut them off at the knees. Do it at the local level. Do it at the state level. That's the only way that we're going to have any kind of change here. It is a cancer that has metastasized into every aspect of our life. The Supreme Court is a big part of it. That's why it's important if we can get somebody in there who is a constructionist, somebody who thinks like Scalia. It's like, well, where is it written in the Constitution that we have the authority to do this? And, of course, he was not as constructionist as I would like to see. You know, he would allow them to violate our freedoms with a TSA, for example. No, there is no constitutional authority for that kind of search on people. And you're going to have that kind of microscopic examination of everybody, treating us as criminals after you vetted us. I mean, you know who we are. We have to buy tickets in advance. You run all these screening things on us all the time. You know everybody that's getting on that plane before we get on the plane. You got far more information on us than you do the people who are walking across the border. You don't even know what country they're from, let alone whether or not they are convicted criminal. And yet they continue to do this to us at the airport. You're going to see this as you're traveling. They continue to do this to us at the airport while they leave the border wide open, the hypocrisy that we see from these people. So this is a series that they put together. As the New American talks about, they said they pull back the curtain. They reveal the names, the tactics of those who really pull the levers in Congress, the swamp. And they make it obvious that although there are 435 members of the House of Representatives, the key decisions are made by a handful of very powerful leaders bent on controlling the country. And that the betrayal is bipartisan. It's why I would never run for Congress. I did it once just to make a point because we didn't have a platform to talk to people. Figured we could get out there and talk to people who ran as a congressman if I ran for Congress. I didn't want to go to Congress. That would be the last thing in the world I would want to do. Try to fight them at the local level. That's the only place we're going to win, folks, is at the local level. They swear to uphold the Constitution. And so you got them right there. That's where you have them. You want something for them, they got you. They want your power from you. They swear they'll do it with the Constitution. That's where you got them. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Call it 10 and young and lovely. The girl from the Bronx goes walking. And when she passes,
each Democrat she passes go. Oh. And they are just fawning over her everywhere you saw her on Stephen Colbert. They can't get enough of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The girl from the Bronx goes passing by. She's their girl from Ipanema right now. And as she puts herself out there, she told Stephen Colbert, she said, I wasn't born. This is what she told the Washington Post. She said, I wasn't born to a wealthy or powerful family. My mother was from Puerto Rico. My dad was from the South Bronx. I was born in a place where your zip code determines your destiny. Well, that's the way the Democrats like. But it hasn't really determined her destiny, has it? I mean, she's going to be able to go to the swamp. She's going to do really well there, too. They just love her there. She may become president, she thinks. Except that, as they point out in Zero Hedge, she's not quite the blue-collar champion she's pretending to be. Breitbart did an examination of her, and they did a fact check. Turns out she grew up in one of the richest counties in the United States. Her dad's very, very successful. She's not a poor girl from the Bronx. Everything about her, the girl from Ipanema, is phony. About the age of five, Alexandria's architect father, Sergio Ocasio, moved the family from the planned community of Parkchester in the Bronx to a home in Yorktown Heights, a wealthy suburb in Westchester County. In a 1999 profile of the area, the New York Times lauded it as a diversity of housing in a scenic setting complete with two golf courses. And that county, the Washington Post described as only middle class. Oh, no, actually, it's number 8 in the nation for counties with the highest average incomes among the wealthiest 1% of residents. The county's average annual income of the top 1% is a staggering $4.3 million. But the Washington Post, in their profile of Cortez, describes it as middle class. Well, I don't know what the upper class is. I guess we've had far more stratification of the wealthy if the average income is $4.3 million in that county, and that's middle class. I guess I'm really dirt poor. It offers a stark contrast to living in the Bronx. In reality, the town's population is 81% white, and the median household income is $96,000, nearly double the average for both New York State and the nation, according to data from 2010 to 2014. And as Zero Hedge points out, they just wonder how long it's going to take her to become like Bernie Sanders and start making $1 million a year. And then the last point is, speaking of a million, that's how many bolivars it takes. Yeah, Venezuela's bolivar. That's how many bolivars it takes to get a cup of coffee now. And that's the socialist policies that she wants to give us. Free everything. You just name it. Free everything. And as we're talking about her being young and tall and tan and lovely, Nancy Pelosi has a problem with that. You had a reporter say, Leader Pelosi, the Democrat Party is increasingly younger, more female, more diverse, more progressive. Should the Democrat House leadership look that way? In other words, should we replace you with somebody younger, more female? Well, I don't know if we can. Yeah, maybe you could get somebody more female than Nancy. I don't know, more diverse than Nancy. She says, well, I'm female, I'm progressive, I'm and all the rest. So what's your problem? 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Yeah, she's not younger. No, she said, they did. They made a choice in one district, so let's not get yourself carried away as an expert on demographics. But this is the Democratic Party. Everything about the Democrats is based on demographics. And that really is what it is. I think we ought to rename it that. The Demographs. Just stop calling it identity politics and just say the Demographs. We just had this demograph say this. She said, within the caucus or outside the caucus, we are, again, we have an array of genders, of generations, of geography. She's got the 3 G's. Gender, generation, geography. And, of course, the geography includes people from outside this country that they want to come in to vote for them. Because if you stay in this country for very long, even if you come here as an illegal, you don't want what the Democrats are offering. We're going to talk about open borders. We're going to talk about the repeal of ICE and of any border enforcement. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's the real news. Live.
host, David Knight.
Let's talk about borders. We're talking about Cortez, the girl from Ipanema. And, now, she's not a poor girl from the Bronx. She's actually coming from a very wealthy family background. But again, everything is about demographics, so she has to appear to be that way. We're going to talk about the policies of borders, specifically what's going on the last 3 days. Began the end of last week, we had the emergency meeting by the EU, and things developed very rapidly, and they are still in a state of flux. And we're going to tell you what's going on in Europe, because this is the same thing. The same people are trying to overthrow our countries, our cultures, our legal systems here in the United States with the open border policies that are doing it to the Europeans as well. Some of them are waking up and fighting back. So we're going to tell you what is happening there. Before we get into that, though, I've got one article here at the top of the hour that I want to talk about. And it's about the one-year anniversary of legalized marijuana in Nevada. And we have Zero Hedge reporting that Nevada traffic deaths have plunged 10%. Following marijuana legalization. Now, this is kind of interesting because we've had a lot of people out there saying, oh, we got to, you know, one of the things that they would say, we cannot legalize marijuana because we're going to have a massive increase in traffic deaths and fatalities. Seriously, I don't think there is any, when we look at addiction, we have people who are experts in that, that say that alcohol is more addictive than heroin, that it is about the most addictive thing you can find anywhere. And in terms of impairing people, I doubt that anything impairs you more than alcohol does. Maybe the opioids do. Opioids impair you so much that you can't even move. I mean, you're just frozen like a zombie. But when we look at marijuana, is that really the case? Well, 1 year on, 1 year after recreational marijuana in Nevada, they say traffic deaths in the state have plunged by 10%. 10%. And that's very important because people keep telling us that traffic fatalities and DUI arrests are going to surge if it's legalized. Well, that's not really the case. And people in Nevada have spent $433 million on medical and recreational marijuana. And tax revenue is getting high. It's getting real high. They're getting lots and lots of money from people who choose to do that, which is fine with me because I choose not to do that. So I'd be happy to let other people pay my taxes for me. Instead of turning my property with property tax, instead of turning it into a rental that I can never get free of. I can never own property in this country because of vast majority of tax revenue, especially in states like Texas, where they don't have a state income tax, a vast majority of revenue is coming from either sales tax or it's coming from property tax. And of course, the property tax is being used to build schools for all the kids that the Mexican socialist president doesn't want to pay for their education. He keeps telling, I'm going to give you everything for free, but hey, by the way, you should go to America. They can do it better than I can. Tweeted out a little meme that's going around with Cortez, and it shows her with that big grin she's perpetually got on her face and says, nice economy you got there. It'd be a shame if something were to happen to it, you know, with all the free stuff she wants to give away. Yeah, he wants to give away our American dream because we can build a new school every 2 days just for the people that we know about, the kids that we know about coming across the border. 250 kids a day coming across. There it is. It'd be a shame if something happened to it with socialism. Yeah. New school every couple of days. How long is your American dream going to last with that? So how do we control immigration? Should we control immigration? Look at the fight that is going on in Europe. We had this coalition that it took Merkel months to put together, and she took a severe beating in the election. She no longer had enough political clout that she could form a government on her own. She was forced to create a coalition government. She was able to put that together, and that coalition began to unravel as that group said, we are going to protect our country, or they understood they were going to be on the chopping block if they didn't do something about it. They were going to be replaced by the alternative for Deutschland, AfD, the alternative for Germany. And so they said, we're not going to do this. She said, no, we're going to let the EU, we're going to let Brussels decide what the immigration policy is going to be for Germany. She said, no, we're not. We're going to do it ourselves. I'm the interior minister. I'm going to resign. If I resign, your coalition falls apart. And so at the last minute, last week, I think it was last Thursday, he had a deadline of July the 1st. that she had to get something together or he was going to resign. So she meets with all these people and they come up with a deal. Here's the deal that they came up with. New American, Alex Newman, I've interviewed him many times here, does a great job of breaking this down. He said they met last week. They inked a compromise deal that will encourage further mass migration while advancing globalism in Europe and beyond. Globalist EU bigwigs and UN bosses all celebrated the plan. Under the plan that they agreed to the end of last week, she thought they had this solved, right? It looked good on paper. Thought maybe we can pull in these people who want to protect their countries. We'll see how this is working for them. Said that they were going to set up asylum places across the EU to process asylum claims of those who would arrive. It was supposed to be a victory. Because previously, migrants would generally be released into the country while their cases were considered. You know, kind of like we're doing now. But, you know, as I reported it last week, and I put it up, I think it was last Thursday, I said, EU pretends they're solving this by getting tough on the borders like Trump, saying we're going to detain people, we're going to vet people, and then we're going to send them back if they don't pass the vetting. Except that's not even really what we're doing here in this country. Still not doing that. The reality is, in our country, of course, Homeland Security, going back to 2015, they said 84% of migrants with children did not appear in court for their final decision. That is what President Trump is trying to stop right now, the fact that we would catch them and release them into the country, and that's why he's getting so much flack from the left. That's why they want to now abolish ICE, because he's doing this. So the EU comes out here, they've got a veneer of Trump that they want to put on their policies, hoping that that will work. But as Alex Newman points out, wasn't really going to do it. Part of the new plan that they came up with last week to try to save Merkel would be to work more closely with African governments. You know, just please don't send your people to us. Yeah, you think that's going to work? Of course that's not going to work. I think that's going to stem the tide. Under the proposed regional disembarkation platform scheme, those who would be picked up at sea would instead be processed in centers based in Africa, Turkey, or elsewhere. So that's why they got these NGO ships out there, paid for by people like George Soros. They pick the people up. They get a couple of miles off of shore. They pick them up and then drive them the long distance to Italy and drop them off. Say, hey, we picked these people up, but it was an emergency, so we had to bring them to you, right? We could have taken them back to where they were, a lot closer to where they were. That's what they're saying they're going to do now. They're going to take them back to Africa or Turkey, where a determination could be made whether or not they could come to Europe. In other words, they're going to vet them. While the establishment press reported this part of the plan as a done deal, however, the agreement simply calls for it to be explored. Yeah, let's think about this. We will explore this idea. Not going to implement it. They're going to explore it. The agreement goes on to say that irregular migrants, and as Alex Newman says, whatever that means, I don't know what an irregular migrant means, would be denied access to Europe. But those, quote, in need of international protection, unquote, would be sent to Europe and resettled at taxpayer expense. Does it sound like they've changed anything? I don't think so. Don't think so. Another key part of the deal was a concession to the governments that have been most adamant about not accepting mass migration. Places like Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, the Czech Republic, others. While the EU was trying to force them all to accept quotas of migrants at proverbial gunpoint, the so-called Visegrad group of nations, that's the four there in Central Europe, said that that was completely off the table and unacceptable. Under the new plan, all resettlement will be of a voluntary nature, and no government will be coerced into accepting migrants against the will of those that it wants to. Statism combined with globalism, however, is infused throughout the EU deal. And as it reports, the agreement calls for a super state to work on improving censorship of content that incites hatred. And that includes criticism of Islam, criticism of homosexuality, criticism of mass migration, criticism of gender confusion, and many, many other things. So it's not going to change anything. It doesn't do anything about the people that are already there that have crashed the borders. And so you're going to wind up having not just London and Frankfurt, but a lot of major European cities are going to become places where the native people become a minority. But we're going to tell you now how this developed over the weekend. Welcome back. It looks like Merkel has avoided having her coalition splinter, but there are major fractures in the EU, and we're going to tell you how these are shaping up. Major fault lines, and they are developing, and it is going to be a lot of earthquakes coming out of this, I think. So what we had last week, and I just told you what this head fake was, they tried to look like they were enacting Trump's border protection policies, but it was simply a head fake that they were trying to put in for Angela Merkel at the last minute. And of course, Sunday, July 1st was the deadline. This is a deadline that was imposed by a guy who is part of the coalition. He's from Bavaria. His political party, he's the leader of the political party there. His name is Seehofer. He'd given her that deadline of Sunday. And it looked like, in the press reports from Sunday and Monday, like she was done. As a matter of fact, he had offered his resignation and so forth. So they had a very, very angry discussion for hours. This is the way it was reported on Sunday, the New York Times. Germany's Merkel seemed to get a reprieve over the migrants, but it didn't last. In other words, she got this reprieve of this deal on Thursday. Looks like, hey, you guys got it. But he looks at it and goes, that's nothing but BS. They said Angela Merkel thought she had fended off a mutiny within her own conservative alliance after returning from marathon talks with European leaders on Friday with an agreement on how to handle migration. But instead, the rebellion escalated late on Sunday, further weakening her. And she is seen, as the New York Times says, the New York Times sees Angela Merkel as the rock of European politics and the guardian of the liberal world order. No, that's the new world order. New York Times. Can't even get that right. And the latest twist, Mrs. Merkel's interior minister, Horst Seehofer, threatened to resign over the dispute with the chancellor's migration policy. They said, another headline from The Guardian, Merkel and Seehofer make a last-ditch bid for migration compromise. Again, we saw on July 1st, Germany's interior minister, Seehofer, to resign after clash with Merkel over migrants. It looked like it was done. Absolutely look like it's done. Then they had an update to this article. This is on Zero Hedge on Sunday. After several hours of negotiation, it appears Chancellor Merkel and CSU leader Seehofer have been unable to reach an agreement. And according to NTV, Seehofer told the CSU board, that's his political party, told the board meeting that he offered to resign as Germany's interior ministry and the CSU party chairman amid clash over Germany's migration policies, sparing Merkel the need to fire him and potentially preserving the political alliance. Now, everybody was reporting that he was resigning and there was going to be another election. And so they're going to have a second election within 9 months. All because people, even in Germany, were fed up with the open borders policy. And however, then things changed. Everything changed today. The euro has jumped after he said that the migration clash with Merkel has been resolved. Again, reported by Zero Hedge, after a torrid 24 hours in German politics, where he first offered to resign, only to withdraw his offer shortly after and replace it with another ultimatum for Merkel, the whole world is on edge to see if Merkel and Seehofer would have a final falling out, or if they would kiss and make up. Well, they have kissed and made up. So it's like, what's the deal here? As the BBC reports it, Merkel returned from Brussels last Friday with an EU-wide strategy and a bilateral agreements with more than 10 countries, so he overplayed his hand. No, that all happened before everything happened on Sunday and Monday. And as a matter of fact, as I'm going to show you in just a moment, she may have agreements with 10 countries, but there is a coalition forming that is saying, we're fed up with this, and we're not going to take this any longer. They is like a network. They're shouting it from the windows. We're fed up and we're not taking this any longer. So they say, they still don't know how it's going to work. And here is the issue. They say, well, these two people have made up. And this guy who is head of the Bavarian party has kissed and made up with Angela Merkel. He may wind up losing his party to the Alternative for Deutschland in the next election. I think that's what's going to happen there, because people are still not happy with the way this is going to work. It isn't going to work. I just read you the last segment, how it's nothing but a head fake. I think he has sealed his fate, but he is saying that he's going to work with her. But the question is this. Questions are already being asked, says the BBC, about how this is going to work on the border with Austria. That is the issue. You see, Austria has elected a very conservative star. You want to talk about the socialist out of the Bronx, Cortez. Oh, she's a millennial and she wants to be president and everything. Well, Austria's already got a millennial who became president. This is a guy, Kurz, who has very quickly risen to the top. As they point out on LMT Online, at 24, Sebastian Kurz was a member of the Austrian cabinet. By 27, he was his country's foreign minister. By 31, this debonair university dropout, as they refer to him, became the world's youngest leader. He became the prime minister of Austria. And as of Sunday, July 1st, he is now the president of the European Union. This is a rotating six-month term. So now he's in a very interesting position, especially because this football that they're kicking back and forth on immigration policy between the two parties inside of Germany, they have now kicked it to the border with Austria. So they say in the next few weeks alone, Kurz in Austria is trying to seal off Europe from asylum seekers arriving by sea. He's trying to orchestrate a summit between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. And critics say he is trying to undermine Merkel, the most consequential European leader of the past decade, the person on which the New York Times pins its hope for a new world order, a liberal world order, as they call it. At stake is not only the fate of Merkel's 13-year run as chancellor at a time when the left barely registers in the top echelons of European power. Yeah, see, they're not having a blue wave in Europe. They're having a red wave, if you want to put it that way. I don't even like those colors. Again, they chose those colors because they didn't want to call the left red. It would have been a little bit too obvious, wouldn't it? They're communist socialists, so they made the conservatives red. But anyway, you know what we mean. Have to use those colors now. They've become accepted. The most important contest shaping the continent's direction is a struggle between competing visions on the right. And Kurz has said that Austria is going to protect its southern border if Germany takes these moves on migrants. So this is how it is shaping up. He says, if we allow asylum applications from these disembarkation platforms, this will create an incredible pull factor. So he's pushing back against that. So here's how this shapes up. We've got Germany's Merkel. She wants a consensus with existing EU rules, and she wants the EU to make the decision. And of course, Germany is the elephant in the room in Brussels, and she wants open borders. Then you've got Seehofer, who has been saying, turn him back at the border, but now he has just caved to Merkel. Then you've got Italy's five-star and the League. They say, change the Dublin rules that say that migrants have to apply for asylum in the first country in which they land, because that's typically been Italy, as they're coming in from Africa. Then you have Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, and Slovakia. Refuse all new migrants. And then you have Austria, where Kurz wants quotas. He wants safe areas. And he has just taken over the position of the presidency of the EU Council that rotates every 6 months. And his goal, he says, is to fight against illegal immigration by securing external borders. We're going to tell you why the Hungarians tell us, giving us some advice, you need to put up a wall. It's worked for us. It's not going to work if you don't put up a wall. Same thing happening there that's happening here. It's a global war. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and I want to take a look at how the Hungarians and other people, the people who are pushing back against the open borders in Europe, how they're doing this and what kind of success they're having. Because the same thing is happening here. We can learn from their experience. And we're going to take a look at what's going on with the U.S. borders. I've actually got a video here of progressives protesting ICE as they are shutting down a human trafficking operation that is trafficking children. This is what's going to happen if you shut down all law enforcement about borders and you just open up our countries. President Trump is right. You're going to be afraid to go outside of your house. And you're not going to be safe inside of your house either. If we just open up our borders to any and every person who wants to come in, it's going to destroy our country in every way possible. Nobody wants this. And I'm going to show you some polls here. Nobody wants it. Hispanics don't want it. Blacks don't want it. The traditional constituents of the Democrat Party don't want it. They're losing in the polls as they push this radical agenda. But let's continue to take a look at what's going on in the EU. We just had this deal that was put together last minute, last Thursday, last Friday, to try to save Angela Merkel's coalition. It looked like that wasn't going to work on Sunday. On Monday, the guy who was threatening to leave this coalition that took her months to put together, about 6 months to put that together, said, "I'm resigning." And then they called him in for a second round of talks. And I don't know what kind of gun they held to his head, but he can basically kiss his party's political future goodbye, because this is really what is happening in Europe. We're going to show you the zeitgeist of the people who are awake. Outside of the UK and outside of Ireland, the rest of Europe is really waking up, I think. And it's going to be a hard time for people like Angela Merkel. Hungary is backing Italy's Salvini's game-changing move to shut ports to migrants, and he brands the EU leaders all talk. Nobody is fooling the Hungarians. You just saw that clip I played, I think it was on Friday. We had the BBC reporter saying, "You stand against everything that is about freedom and liberal values." You know, liberal values meaning civil liberty, not the socialism that they put out there. But he said, "No, we don't. We're protecting our people. We have a right to protect our people. And we'll tell you why there is a moral case to be made for protecting yourself here in just a moment." But this is the Hungarian Minister for Foreign Affairs. He said the decision by the Minister of the Interior in Italy, his decision not to allow ships operated by the so-called NGOs, you know, these are the organizations being funded by Soros and other people of his ilk, that are full of illegal migrants to enter the Italian harbor, is a real game changer, because that decision of Mr. Salvini has proven that, yes, it is possible to protect the maritime border of the European Union. I find it really tragical or frustrating that so far the European Union has taken it as a fact that the maritime border in the Mediterranean Sea cannot be protected. It can. He said, look at the Australians. Everything they have is a maritime border. They can protect their border. He said that his country was being put under very serious pressure by the European Union to accede to its demands to accept centrally distributed migrant quotas. In other words, they're going to determine what the makeup of your country is. They're going to determine your economic activity. They're going to tell you what the demographics in your country is going to be. They're going to tell you what you can and cannot say. Remember, that's a big part of this agreement. If you don't push their values of gender fluidity, if you don't push their values of wide open borders, if you don't embrace Islam sufficiently, they'll put you in jail just like they did Tommy Robinson. That's the tolerance of the left. No, it is not liberal values, folks. They don't like free speech. You don't embrace free speech, you don't talk to me about liberal values. And by that I mean, again, they stole that word. These are socialists calling themselves liberals, and they've done it for so long, they've stolen that word. Very confusing if you go back and look at labels, but they intend it to be that way. You know, the label of liberal used to mean people who supported economic freedom, who supported civil liberties, individual liberty, things like the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. Those were liberals at the time of Jefferson. Those were liberals all the way up until the early part of the 20th century. That was a great thing to be called. It was a great thing to be a liberal. Some people still call themselves classical liberals because they want to distance themselves from the Libertarian Party. And there's a good reason to do that after Gary Johnson and his running mate this last time. I call myself Libertarian. You can find me on Twitter, Libertarian, because I want to distance myself from the Libertarian Party. I worked with them quite a while, but no, I don't want to be called that. And so now they've destroyed that word. They've destroyed the word liberal. So what do we mean? You have to define it now. Every time there's a good label, somebody destroys it. Anyway, Hungary said they were able to resist quotas by uniting with Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia. See that? Those four groups there. Austria is going to be joining them as well. And the people in Bavaria are also conservative enough, and they want to have their culture, their country. They're going to be pushing back against this as well. And the Hungarian foreign minister says, we will never give up our own right to make the decision on our own who we will allow to come into our country. That's it. It's just that simple. And the Democrat Party needs to understand that here in America as well. Hungarians warn the U.S. that illegal migration cannot be controlled without a strong border. Again, the same foreign minister, he's interviewed by Breitbart. He said, we made a very clear decision that we protect our border in a way that we have full control. They're going to determine who comes in. It's not going to be told to them. These other people are not going to make their decision to come in without the permission of others, the people who live there. He says, as we understood that if you have a land border, multiple hundreds of kilometers long, not as long as yours with Mexico, but it's long enough from a Central European perspective. If you don't build a safe, or let's say a strong and effective infrastructure, you're not able to control that. So we built an infrastructure. We built a fence. We have a military there. Hear that, President Trump? It is your duty, not just your right, it is your duty to protect our border as president. You have the authority to do that. You've even had the Supreme Court come in and say, yes, he does have the authority to say that they're going to vet who comes in. So do it. Do it with the military. Do it with a wall. You can send the military there. You can build the wall out of the military budget instead of building housing on military bases for people that you let in because you don't put the military on the border. That's what creates this whole confusion. That's what creates an opening for the Democrats to say, oh, this is about compassion. They're here now. They got to stay. No, they shouldn't come in the first place. Keep them with their family in their country. Build a wall with the military budget. It's a record budget. You've got the money to do it, and you've got the authority to do it. You have the duty to do it, and you can do it with the military. Listen to the Hungarians. They said, we built a fence. We put the military there. We have the police there, and we are very, very strict on holding everybody who wants to come illegally. The Bulgarian prime minister says, close Europe's borders, imprison illegals, deport them back to Africa. And again, he's speaking this after the European Union mini-summit on migration, where they tried and apparently did save Angela Merkel's coalition. The French ambassador is praising the Hungarian prime minister, and he says Muslims in France and Germany are anti-Semitic. No, really? Newsflash! The Muslims are anti-Semitic. Yeah, I think we knew that. But it's good to hear somebody say that, especially in the French government, especially in Macron's government. In a confidential note, which was addressed to the palace, the French palace, and to top European officials, the ambassador, Eric Fournier, defends the Hungarian leader, saying that the migrant policy of Prime Minister Orbán is a model for Europe and that many politicians in the West suffer from Hungaryophobia. He described Hungary's migration policies as, quote, having anticipated the problems posed by illegal migratory movements. And he slammed Anglo-Saxon and French media, saying, listen to this, any democratically elected regime that doesn't correspond to their worldview is called populist. We saw that. That was that clip. We had the Hungarian foreign minister and being lectured by that smug BBC reporter, and he shut her down in a great way. When we come back, we're going to tell you what is happening in Greece, what is happening in Switzerland, what is happening in Denmark. It's the same thing that is happening in America. We better wake up, and President Trump better do what he said he was going to do. He has a duty to protect our border, and he can.
The greetings of people in trouble.
Welcome back, folks. I've got news from Greece, from Switzerland, from Denmark, from the Netherlands, from Ireland, and from the UK. Are we going to have these countries, these cultures, these civilizations? They want to talk about multiculturalism. They don't value multiculturalism. They want to subsume everything into a one-world government. Everything these people say is a lie. Keep talking about, oh, I got free this, I got free that. I mean, look at how it works out in Venezuela. They want to pretend that they're all about diversity and culture. One of the most diverse places filled with culture you've ever seen was the way Europe used to be. Now they're trying to homogenize it under Brussels, under the European Union. Some people are waking up about this war of civilization. We'll see if it's too little too late. And I'm going to tell you some of the awakenings that are happening in those countries that I just ran through. Of course, not in Ireland. They seem to be fast asleep in Ireland. Going down the drains, unfortunately, there. But before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the sale that we are currently having right now at InfoWarsStore.com. part of our July 4th sale. This is Second Amendment, Second American Revolution 4th of July Super Sale. We've got free shipping store-wide, 50% off many of our most popular products, things like Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, 40% off with free shipping. We have Knockout Sleep Support. We've taken that down to the price of $17.76, and you get free shipping while supplies last. Silver Bullet has been taken down to $9.95 with free shipping while supplies last. Again, that's our colloidal silver formula. DNA Force Plus, massive savings, 50% off with free shipping. And that's a very expensive product to produce, so 50% off is a big dollar savings. We have all Super Blue products, our entire line of dental products, two flavors of toothpaste, a mouthwash, as well as an immune gargle spray. That is Nano Silver, very effective at combating virus as well as bacteria. Bacteria that can cause gum disease, that can lead to heart disease. And you can get all those Super Blue products, 50% off plus free shipping. And finally, we got Alexa Pure Breeze, $100 off with free shipping. And InfoWars Life Select Storable Food, 3 months supply, 50% off with free shipping. Big savings on those two high dollar products. But many, many products store-wide on massive discount, 40, 50% or more. And you can get free shipping on everything at the site as part of this 4th of July super sale. Okay, as we look at this, the headline, the global economy is running out of its most valuable resource. What is that? People. So the globalists have told us, and we keep hearing this from them, you need to move your factories to China. Remember when we heard that? And we need the NAFTA free trade agreement, which was not a free trade agreement. It was thousands of pages of managed trade. It wasn't free trade. You don't have to have that big of an agreement. You don't have to have a big treaty to have free trade. Just say, hey, we're going to make it free. No. It was micromanaged trade. But they kept telling us, you don't want to do this kind of work. You don't want this kind of a factory job. We're going to send that to China. We're going to send it to Mexico. Don't worry about that. And then they tell us, oh, you don't want to do other work that is still remaining here in the United States. So we're going to bring in foreign workers because you people don't want to do any of this stuff. Right? And we keep seeing how our economy is going down, how our kids don't have any entry-level positions, don't get work experience. Because of that type of thing. And we understand this isn't working. And so now we hear, we're going to repatriate the capital. We're bringing that back in. You know why they're doing that, don't you? Because they've got some other workers made out of metal. Because you don't want to do those jobs either, right? So they're going to be allowed to bring in their capital that they have parked offshore. After sending the factories offshore, after bringing the workers in, and telling us, you know, we got to have this because we just don't have enough workers. You know, it was back in 2000, the UN was stating these principles. We just don't have enough people. We're going to have to bring in people from the third world in order to pay your Social Security. Social Security has always been a lie. It was a lie when it was done in Germany by Bismarck. They picked the age of 65 because that was the life expectancy. They didn't expect anybody to actually get this or most people not to get it. It's everything about socialism and these social programs and these open borders, open trade, as they call it. It's all a lie. It's all a lie. So they're bringing these people in, telling us they're going to pay for our Social Security. No, what they're going to do. There she is. There she is braying. That's a great cartoon from Ben Garrison. Really nailed it with that cartoon. They're going to bring in workers to pay for your Social Security. Yeah, right. No, really. They're just bringing them in as temporary slave workers until they can put the real slaves, the robots. That's what the word robot means. It's a Czech word for slave. That's the robots are going to replace the workers. And then they're going to leave us. The question was always, are we going to have to kill them? Or are we going to let them die out by reducing their fertility? You know, we can do things to them chemically. We can do things to them socially so they don't have any kids and they'll gradually die out. And then maybe when they're really small numbers, then maybe we can hard kill them. But we'll do a soft kill first. Well, the part of the hard kill, I think, and they can just kind of wash their hands of it. They can say, we're trying to be nice to everybody. So we're bringing everyone in from the third world into the first world. We're going to pack everybody in here together. And we're going to be one big happy family. And they're going to pay for your Social Security. No, they're not. They're going to work in our factories. No, they're not. You're going to have robots. No, they're going to fight us. They're going to fight us in culture wars. And we're going to see genocides like we've seen in the third world. We have these different groups fighting each other. That's really what they're doing. Here with this. The leader of a Greek island community warns residents who are angry over migration may take the law into their own hands. This is where it began in Europe, and this is where it is the most intense, is in Greece. The leader of a community in Moria entered his third day on a hunger strike Wednesday when he revealed that the tensions caused by the influx of asylum seekers to Lesbos, that's an actual island, folks, since 2015 were escalating dramatically. He says, this does not go any further. From 2015, we lived through the constant destruction of our village, that the sanitary facilities on the island were not able to handle the influx of migrants living at the camp. He said the sewage poured into the nearby torrents and ended up in the sea, passing through our property. Garbage everywhere, dirt, mosquitoes, every concept of life in the village has been destroyed in regards to health and safety. We're all being duped here and in Europe. They're making fun of us. The residents are ready to take the law into their own hands. We're trying to contain the local community to preserve whatever social cohesion is left. See, this is the plan. This is the plan. To bring in people in such large numbers, an invasion. And it is a worldwide invasion. It is weaponized migration to bring down the West, because the West stands in the way of the global government, so it must be destroyed. Conditions within the camps for migrant women and children have also deteriorated. The UN Refugee Agency claims earlier this year that both women and children were at severe risk of sexual violence in the camps from male migrants on the island of Samos. Switzerland is saying, we're not going to take the people from Greece and Italy. They don't want the people that I just described. They're overflowing. We're not taking them. Switzerland has rejected a second asylum seeker relocation program proposed by the European Union to relieve the burden on frontier countries like Italy and Greece. Switzerland had participated in the first such relocation program in 2015. They pledged to take in 1,500 asylum seekers from Italy and Greece. The EU launched a second relocation program last autumn, and Switzerland also asked for to accommodate as many people as possible. They rejected that idea. Denmark. 10 out of every 12 rapes committed by migrants or their descendants, reports Paul Joseph Watson at InfoWars. That's 83%, folks, 83%. And yet another reminder of the huge problems that open border policies have caused in Europe. A recent study shows that 83% of rapes in Denmark are committed by migrants or their descendants. This is between January 2016 and May 2017. Rapes where victims don't know the perpetrator are committed by a person with a migrant background, with perpetrators typically originating from Macedonia, Somalia, Bulgaria, Iraq, and Eritrea. The Integration and Immigration Minister in Denmark said the situation was completely horrible. He said, that says there's something wrong with the immigrant communities in Denmark. And a Stockholm University law professor said the migrants were overrepresented in rape statistics because of poor integration and because they feel contempt for society. Poor integration is their fault. They self-ghettoize. They don't want to participate in the culture and the religion of the country in which they're going. They don't want to have anything to do with that. They want to self-segregate. He also said the common theme was for migrant rapists to blame female victims for dressing provocatively. See, you either wear a burqa or they feel entitled to rape you because they view you as a prostitute. And so the Netherlands has approved a burqa ban. The Dutch Senate there has approved a law that bans the wearing of face-covering clothing in public buildings. And if you do that, you'll be subject to a fine of $475, equivalent in euros. They said, we have a free country in the Netherlands, but sometimes limits must be imposed on that freedom if mutual communication is impeded or safety is jeopardized. So the Muslims say, well, we're going to sue you. We're going to try to use your system to shut it down until we can establish our system. We'll be right back. David Knight.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
So as I reported in the last segment, people in Denmark, as they're looking at this and talking about the number of rapes that are happening there, said the people don't want to assimilate. Yeah, we understand that. It's very clear that they don't want to. They self-ghettoize. So what do you do when you invade your countries, when you try to overthrow their your culture? You've got to create a new culture. That's what Macron is trying to do. And so he is trying to overthrow the French culture. At the same time, he is trying to create social cohesion, as he points out. His idea is to have compulsory military service for social cohesion. That's right. If we can create a Hitler Youth, we can keep everybody together. We can all wear uniforms and we can goose step around. And of course, glad to see that President Trump has gone quiet on this idea of having big military parades like the French and the Russians and so forth do. We don't need that in America. It's a waste of money. And this is not the kind of social cohesion we need. But what is Macron talking about? The plan intends on introducing youth to military life and to service, compulsory, from the age of 16 for both girls and boys. Girls and boys. The unpopular program is expected to cost the French government nearly $2 billion. The French government has introduced a plan to bring it back for all 16-year-olds, national service, and do it for boys and girls. They will have it in two different phases. The first one will be a mandatory one-month placement, a focus on civic culture. Lebensstrom. I look at this stuff and it's like, why should anybody be forced into compulsory service to the government? That really grates against my nature, grates against my culture, quite frankly. It's not quite the program that Macron had in mind, reports Zero Hedge. They said when he first floated the idea during his 2017 race for the presidency, it was military service in miniature. All French citizens would be forced to have a direct experience of military life for a minimum of 1 month between the ages of 18 and 21. Now they've expanded that somewhat, but they've softened it and broadened it. So that's not quite as intense, but broader. It's now called Universal National Service. And is it popular? No, it's very unpopular with the people who are going to be forced into it. They've had 14 youth organizations objecting to it. This is not going to be very popular in France, where you've got socialism well entrenched, where the kids there, the college kids, are used to going to college and getting everything for free, including room and board, without having to pass any tests. I mean, these are the spoiled brats of the West that we have created. But the point that they make in the Zero Hedge article, and this is the key, you don't create cohesion, social cohesion that way. Macron, as I say, hopes to provide some sort of social glue, except that culture is an organic phenomenon. It is something that has to be based on shared experiences. It's something that organically grows out of your religious beliefs, out of your cultural history, out of your family ties. And what has the what have the globalists and the elitists in charge of Western governments been trying to do? They've been trying to stamp out all of the things that give us social cohesion, that give us that glue. They've tried to stamp out the family. They've tried to stamp out all religious beliefs and the foundation of our rule of law. So that has been the crusade of the globalists. And so now they want to go back and to create social cohesion. They're following Hitler's plan, the Lebensstraum, right? Get the kids together, get the Hitler Youth. Let's all just get in the communes together. We can, you know, produce the babies without any marriage, without any family. You know, go all the way back to Plato's Republic. Yeah, the ideal thing for the dictators is that you don't have family. You don't even know who your parents are. Maybe they can, you know, do that sort of thing until they can get the test tube babies along. Brave New World. That's ultimately where it's going. It's the high-tech implementation of Plato's New Republic. No families, just the government. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back to our third hour of the broadcast. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined by Lionel, so make sure you stick around. It's always interesting when Lionel joins us. I want to finish up on immigration. I've got a little bit more to say about Europe. We've talked about the fault lines in Europe. How you've got some countries that are very concerned about this. You've got fault lines within Germany, as they have now apparently patched that up with a little bit of duct tape. I don't know how long that patch is going to last. Now they have pushed the problem to the border with Austria. And Austria's new president, the conservative president, who has now become the president of the EU Council for 6 months, as it's a rotating thing, is not having it. So this is not over yet. And the battle lines are being drawn there. But the people, let's talk about the people on the other side. The Irish prime minister, a woman, interestingly enough, defending the European immigrants that are coming in, the Muslims who are coming in for the most part. She said the European crisis is a rise of the right. It's not a problem of mass migration. Seriously? Seriously? She says this isn't so much a migrant crisis as it is a political crisis, said the Irish prime minister. She insisted that, rather he insisted, should say, Europe needs migration, claiming the belief that hundreds of thousands of migrants from the world's poorest countries arriving in boats and storming the EU's frontiers is a problem that has been invented by the right-wing parties for political gains. That's not a real problem, see? it's just your imagination. All we have to do is it's just a political problem because we've had the people on the right winning elections. Why do you think the people on the right are winning the elections? It's because they see the problems. We've just been talking about the problems in Greece and Italy and elsewhere. Said, we have a political crisis because of the fact that anti-immigration and populist parties have been very electorally successful in Italy and Central and Eastern Europe. Because the immigration is a problem. That's why this has turned around. That's why you've got political parties like Angela Merkel's that have been safe for decades, seeing the kind of reversals that they've had there. So this is a European problem, and not just for one member state, he said. He called for solidarity, for sharing the burden. So the reason why people are leaving Africa in such big numbers is because those countries are unsafe. They're ungoverned, and there's very little economic opportunity. Oh, and they're going to bring all of that to Europe. When they bring everybody that's in those countries in, then Europe will be unsafe, ungoverned, and very little economic opportunity. As Ann Coulter said, Americans are told we have to understand that this is just part of native cultures, all the stuff that's happening, all the rape and all the filth that they're talking about in Greece, the fact that just had too many people, couldn't accommodate that many people. She said, exactly, it's their culture. We're not rescuing anybody. We're bringing in diseased cultures. The alleged refugees don't float above and apart from their societies. Feminists look at this and see the world as a boy versus girl. But in reality, it's the civilized versus the primitive. How did violent, backward, misogynistic cultures become our problem? Did we take a vote and agree to be the world's charity ward? And yet, as we look at what's happening, and of course, the Irish prime minister says, yeah, bring them on in. He's fine with that. Britain's de-radicalization programs are failing. They have created behavioral insight teams, also known as nudge units. Remember when that was all the rage with the Obama administration, the social engineers there? We had Cass Sunstein, wrote a book about behavioral modification. He called it nudge because they're going to do it gradually. You know, it's a boiling frogs thing. Yeah, let's just nudge people a little bit. Let's propagandize them. You know, we got to put the narrative out there and make sure they hear that and make sure they don't hear the other side. That's where all the censorship of the left is coming from. That's just called the nudge. No, it's a hammer, folks. Let's call it what it is. It's intolerance. It's censorship. It's a violation of the First Amendment. And it's not really working out for the Brits. They have these de-radicalization programs. They looked at 33 of them, and they said, well, only two of them maybe are working. The rest of these are total failures. This is part of a program they called Prevent. It was a strategy presented in 2011. To the UK Parliament by the Secretary of State for the Home Department. It was designed to keep vulnerable citizens from becoming terrorists or from supporting any form of violent extremism inspired by radical Islamicist or right-wing ideologies. But they haven't been successful. Guess why? The facilitators were afraid to really engage the people because of political correctness. When you lock up people like Tommy Robinson for just reporting outside of a courtroom, when you come after people because you don't agree with what they have to say, when you shut down the First Amendment, and when you criminalize political correctness, this is what you get. So they have facilitators who are uncomfortable dealing with sensitive topics. So they would often refuse to engage if these topics are brought up. Well, of course they would, because they could go to jail if they really violate the sense of political correctness in the UK. So they found also that the teachers in particular were afraid to bring up matters of race. So, you know, because racism, that's the one word that you learn if you're getting a college degree in America. Racist, racist, racist. You may not know what it means, but you'll throw it at everybody you disagree with. So they're afraid to bring up matters of race or religion with their students because they were afraid that they would appear to be discriminatory. So they just refused to talk about these topics altogether. So how are you going to de-radicalize people? How are you going to inoculate them against radical Islam? As they report on this article, Zero Hedge, they said in Britain, the majority, 82% of the 228 people in custody for terrorism-related offenses are Islamic extremists. In August of 2017, the EU's counterterrorism coordinator said that the UK has more radicalized Muslims than any other European country. And he added that Britain, quote, has identified 20,000 to 35,000 radical Islamic extremists. But we got Tommy Robinson locked up in jail for free speech, for speaking out against people that had, against grooming gangs that were covered up by the government. So the government decided to cover up further and they threw him in jail, put a gag order on it until they realized, hey, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. If we let people report on it, then we'll have the sycophantic outlets like The Guardian, like the BBC. They will tell our side of the story. And everybody else will be afraid to talk about it. You know, because they're afraid to even engage in these behavioral insight teams. They're afraid to even nudge people about their racist religion. So they got 20,000 to 35,000 radicals. Of these, 3,000 are worrying for MI5. And of those, 500 are under constant and special attention. Why aren't they worried about the 35,000 radicals? I mean, they've got 500 people that they feel are ready to pull the trigger. Is that it? And so they're watching them very closely. So finally, as we look abroad, and then the next section, we're going to take a look at what's going on in the U.S. with this move to try to shut down ICE. And I've got a clip for you I'm going to play. We've got the progressives out there hectoring ICE as they are trying to shut down a child trafficking organization. South Koreans are saying, we don't want Muslim refugees. Over 500,000 people in South Korea have signed a petition saying they don't want to be like the UK or like Germany. Again, this is a article we have on Infowars.com. South Koreans are revolting against the arrival of Muslim refugees, with over 500,000 signing a petition saying that Muslim migrants don't integrate. Yeah, we know that. Everybody knows that. They self-ghettoize. They get very angry because they don't succeed in these small ghettos. And then they get even more angry at the host country that they hated when they came in. The controversy began when an influx of nearly 1,000 asylum seekers from Yemen arrived in a South Korean resort island. They took advantage of a new visa waiver program that allowed people from 186 countries, that's pretty much all of them, to visit the island without a tourist visa. This led to 950 foreign nationals, the majority of them from Yemen, arriving as tourists under a one-month permit, but then immediately claiming asylum, a process that can take years while they remain in the country. So they said, well, we've read about all the problems that migrants have caused in Europe, in Germany, and in France in particular. We don't want that to happen here, say the South Koreans. So we come back. We're going to talk about what's happening on our southern border and what happened on our northern border. We got terrorists coming in through Canada as well. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. And they're not Canadian. Don't worry about MS-13, says NPR. They're just mighty munchkins. Mighty munchkins? This is a joint report put together by NPR and ProPublica. Now, to give you an idea, ProPublica is funded by George Soros, in part. I wonder how much of that, what percentage he's funding of it. But, of course, they come out and they say, so to hear Trump tell it, MS-13 is this shadowy gang. Well, they're not actually shadowy. They write it all over their bodies. You see the little tears on their t-
tattooed on their face about the people that they've killed and so forth. Yeah, it's not shadowy. They're right there in your face, and we won't do anything about it. But is this gang that is organized across continents? Yeah. With the major plans to disrupt the security of the U.S. border and to enslave people and to kill their rivals and to turn their girlfriends or anybody else they can grab a hold of into prostitutes, to traffic children and so forth. Yeah, that's what they're saying. But no, they said that's what Trump says. What I'm actually seeing is that this gang is settling basically high school beefs. It's just a couple of different, you know, it's like the Jets and the, what was the other group? I don't know. The Sharks and the Jets or something from West Side Story. Gee, Officer Krupke, we're just a couple of high school gangs here. No big deal here, right? That's the way they try to portray MS-13. I said, one detective told me they've called them the Mighty Munchkins because they're kids who haven't yet finished their growth spurts. But they team up together in the woods, and they wreak a lot of carnage. Yeah, with machetes. You know, it's one thing to have, you know, the gangs there, but it's another thing to chop your rivals into pieces with a machete and to turn your the young girls that you go to school with into prostitutes. President Trump has said that MS-13 is ravaging neighborhoods across the United States. That's what some of the parents of some of these kids who have been killed say. And again, why are we talking about them being in high school? It's because the adult leaders of MS-13 have told them to come in because they'll get a free pass. They're having the teenage gang members running the human trafficking because they can just come in as unaccompanied minors themselves and they get all the DACA benefits. They're dreamers. They're not MS-13. They're dreamers. That's the way the Democrats see them. And so this is the way that George Soros and NPR portray MS-13, Mighty Munchkins. And President Trump said many Democrats are deeply concerned about the fact that their leadership, quote unquote, wants to denounce and abandon the great men and women of ICE, thereby declaring war on law and order. These people will be voting for Republicans in November, and in many cases, joining the Republican Party. I think that is true. If we take a look at this, we got the majority of Hispanics want stricter immigration. This is the poll. I talked about it yesterday, the Harvard-Harris poll. It was done by a former Clinton pollster and strategist, Mark Penn. What did he find? He found 51% of Hispanics want stricter border laws. 53% of blacks want stricter border laws. They said 55% believe that illegal immigrant families should be held in custody until a judge reviews their case. And that's what President Trump is doing. Now, the majority of people, 88%, opposed separating the kids from the parents while the parents are being processed for committing a crime, while the parents are being processed for endangering their children. But that's because the media, I mean, that's this cognitive dissonance that they've got there. They don't understand that it's a crime that's been committed. They don't understand that the kids have been endangered. And they don't understand that a lot of the people who claim that they're their kids are not really related to these kids. Nevertheless, Penn, who again was a former Clinton pollster and a strategist, Mark Penn, said mostly they want people who cross the border illegally to be turned around and returned home efficiently. And as we look at this, President Trump says, you really want to abolish ICE? As Breitbart points out, abolishing ICE would have freed 1.6 million illegal aliens into American communities in the last 5 years. If Democrats had had their way, if ICE had been abolished 5 years ago, back in 2013, there would be at least 1.64 million illegal aliens, many of which are convicted criminals, released into U.S. neighborhoods and communities rather than being deported. For example, as President Trump tweeted out to Elizabeth Warren and to Kamala Harris, you really want to abolish ICE? Well, take a look at this. And here's one of the articles they tweeted back to them. ICE removes Salvadoran MS-13 affiliate and an Irish national convicted of manslaughter. This guy, the El Salvadoran national, was encountered by Border Patrol. He tried to enter the U.S. Illegally. They were then notified that he had an active arrest warrant in El Salvador for being affiliated with a terrorist organization, MS-13. They think they're a terrorist organization in El Salvador, but NPR doesn't think so. And then the Irish national was a member of an organized crime syndicate called the Cockwall Gang. He served time for manslaughter in his country, and he was wanted there for possession of articles to be used in theft. Then we have the Trinitarios Gang. I'm sure they're just a bunch of misguided high school students. Officer Krupke, give them a pass. These are the guys who killed that teenager in the Bronx, in that area that Cortez wants to represent.
As it's reported by Daily Mail, they prefer machetes to guns, and they pimp girls out as prostitutes after they lure them into the gang. And it's just not on our southern border either. We've got U.S. border agents arresting Central American gang members entering via Canada at a Peruvian national, a Mexican national. The Mexican national admitted to being a member of the 18th Street Gang. Both individuals were processed for prosecution and removed. The 18th Street Gang was another one of these, like MS-13, that thrived in L.A. It was born out of there. It originally started in America. Then it moved to Central America. And that's what kind of happened with MS-13. And then there's this. We got a video of the progressives protesting ICE as they are shutting down an area there where they're doing human trafficking with children. Here's that video.
We love our neighbors. They also wrote on the ground with chalk saying OPD is a disgrace. They were upset thinking that this was an immigration investigation because Homeland Security was out here. But we just got word from Oakland police that this was, in fact, a federal criminal search warrant executed in connection with human sex trafficking of juveniles right here at the 700 27th Street. One person seen covered in a blanket, taken away by law enforcement here in Oakland. Neighbors say this was the second person taken away, and they're upset. Hudar Cohen says she woke up to the sounds of a crying baby and law enforcement officers outside this home on the 700 block of 27th Street.
I just heard my roommate like racing upstairs and crying and being like, I don't know what to do. And I came out, and all of our housemates got together, and we came outside, and we saw a bunch of cop cars, a bunch of other cars that are apparently like ICE cars that and just so many ICE agents like coming in and entering our neighbor's house.
Cohen said no one was being told what was going on except
whatever. There's like ICE cars, so they must be bad guys, you know. We've got a guy who is a Christian Lebanese. He says uncontrolled immigration has all the attributes of invasion. As a Christian Lebanese, I saw the nightmare of uncontrolled immigration of Palestinians, which caused the civil war in my country. And as a part-time resident of North Lebanon, I'm seeing the effect of Syrian migration on the place. So I despise these virtue-signaling open borders imbeciles. People like Josh Whedon, the guy who directed the Avengers series. Going to beat you, not going to start a war, not going to shoot you, run over you, threaten your kids. We're going to beat you with passionate compassion. Yeah, right. That's what it looks like. Protesting the officers as they're shutting down human trafficking of children. Oh, yeah, we love you, but we're going to destroy your culture, and we're going to do it with our fantasy movies, our weaponized perversion of superhero fandom. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and joining us now is Lionel. You can find Lionel on YouTube. Lionel Nation is the name of his channel, and you can find him on Twitter at Lionel Media. And, of course, Lionel is a legal analyst. He's a licensed trial lawyer, and I would love to get his take on Supreme Court because President Trump is looking at a lot of different people now. We've got the list of 25 that he put out there before he became president. He put that out there as a candidate. That's the first time we've had a presidential candidate give us a list of 25 people that are on there. And he has said he's going to make his announcement next Monday. So before I talk to you again, Lionel, he will have made his announcement. Do you have any idea, based on the people that are there, based on all the scuttlebutt that we're hearing out of Washington, what is going to happen or what should happen? What's your take on this?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to handicap this one. My pick would be Emmanuel Lewis, TV's Webster. I've never been very good at this, so I'm going to leave it at that. I kid, of course. Now, look.
I have no idea who that is, but maybe the audience does.
Webster, TV's Webster, the character Webster, Emmanuel Lewis. Come on.
Okay.
I always give
he's
that.
Not on
I always,
the list. Neither is Judge Napolitano. I mean, we got several
Judge,
TV
listen.
Characters.
I love Judge Napolitano, okay? Yeah. I love the guy. And I love the way his hair changes color by the hour. I love that. He is a great television comic, great libertarian, whatever you want to call it. He ain't going to be judge. I don't want him to be judge. And Jeanine Pirro, what are you kidding me? Jeanine Pirro, Let me stop you. Do you know what being a Supreme Court justice means? Look, you may not like Sotomayor, not you, but the collective. You may not like these people, but these are federal judges. And even Kagan, who was a solicitor general, knows a little bit about federal jurisprudence. This is not for the squeamish, okay? This is not, there is a degree of, I hate to say it, academic juridicature, juridical knowledge, and the like. Let me tell you something. If you ever want to wish you were dead, I mean, read anything, the history of substantive due process. Read any lecture. This is one of the hottest topics. They still talk about this. All the judges. I swear to you, David, you would rather drink bleach. If you want to go through.
I got an idea. You know, I was an accounting major for one semester, and I started beating my head against the wall because it was all about tax law. And it's like, I can't do this. I hate taxes, and I hate the law. I can't
if
do
you
this.
Want, because, see, but due process is about a procedure. It's called notice and the right to be heard. But what's substantive due process? What? It's almost like it's crazy. If you want to talk about administrative law, too, oh, my God. Admiralty, which is kind of interesting, but weird sections of fisheries acts. This idea that somehow lay people come along and say, I think Judge Jeanine would be a great. Are you nuts? Listen, a couple of things here. First of all, let's play what if. Now, imagine this. You have right now this chance of this. It's going to be a 5-4 conservative court, right? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Let's assume next Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because Ruth is, I mean, they're holding her up. This is Weekend at Bernie's, okay? Bless her heart, RBG.
She may be term limited by God anytime, yeah. She's 85 years old.
You're going to love this. The other day I said, what do you think about RBG? And my friend said, well, I think they have the right to marry as well. I said, no, not LGB, RGB. Anyway, so this is the
red, green, blue. So, I thought that's how TV monitors worked, yeah.
So there, very good. So there you have her, right? So that would be now 6-3. Got it? 6-3 after she goes. Breyer's 79.
Yeah.
If Trump does a second term, how about 7-2 with Kagan and Sotomayor bringing up the rear and Dennis Miller, who rarely even gets a smile out of me, say they could redo Laverne and Shirley on Netflix. Okay, so the point is, this is, I mean, I don't even know if this is not good. I don't want there to be one way or another. But here's the best news. And I want everybody to understand this. You're not going to sit there and say, I can't wait to overturn Roe against Wade. I can't wait. It doesn't work like that. You may never get the chance. You may never have the issue. There is something called stare decisis. The idea is that we don't do this. We don't just go back and say, you know what? Come and think of it, separate but equal. I kind of like that. Bring back Plessy.
Yeah, but let's talk about that because, you know, Kennedy was there. They had Roe v. Wade back then, what was it, 73 or something? And then they had it recently, and he wrote the decision and said, well, you can't put any regulations on this if it creates an undue burden. Well, that's kind of a subjective standard there. So I think what's going to happen is you're going to see regulations that are going to come in and handle this at the state level, just like we did here in Texas. We had a situation where they said, look, if this is a health clinic and if you're doing an operation, you're going to have to, if you're an abortion clinic, you're going to have, or any other kind of health clinic that's doing an operation, you're going to have hallways and doorways that are wide enough to get a gurney through. Well, Planned Parenthood said, well, that's going to shut down all of our things. And so they challenged that. I think the Supreme Court, if it has constructionists in there, they're going to be more friendly to state laws that try to regulate this for the benefit of women's health. Don't you think?
Listen,
so?
There is going to be, you're going to be doing some things, whether it's going to be balancing tests. You're going to be talking about whether, for example, something in the case of equal protection, is this a protected class? There are tests. When you read the case law and you go back, for example, just take a bar exam. Go ahead and just do a walk-in and just take it. And you'll say, wow, there's a lot of stuff here. Yes, but here's the best part. Let me explain, David. What happens is when you get that robe on you, we keep talking about this. Anthony Kennedy, who was it? Who picked him? Reagan or whatever? Anthony Kennedy and Sandra Day O'Connor, they thought Reagan said, I got him now. there, Asen. No, they're not. Because you don't know the context of when something comes up. People think they know Scalia, who, by the way, let me remind you, was found dead in an Illuminati hunting lodge with a pillow on his head. That's all I
know. I was there. I went there after that happened. That's one of the creepiest places I've ever been.
Nobody.
All kinds of weird stuff around that place. I mean, it was crazy.
Nothing to see here. Hello, Mrs. Scalia. Yeah, you don't mind if I do an autopsy on the phone? Yeah, sure. He was, and the people were saying, well, he was fat. He was fat, and he probably, oh, thank you, Quincy. So anyway, that notwithstanding, the thing about this, what's critical is that when you put this robe on, John Kennedy picked Byron Whizzer White. And by the way, most people think it was because of his football career. Whizzer was because of a bladder disorder that he had, but I digress. Byron Whizzer White turned out to be one of the most conservatives. Harry Blackmun, Nixon appointee, Roe against Wade. And the best was Earl Warren. Earl Warren never even was a governor of California. This one, the Warren Court and this and that. Now, so what I'm saying is you never know. In addition, when you go back and look at what Scalia wrote, some of his decisions were extremely, the flag burning case, was that unanimous? I mean, there are things that happen that judges will, based upon the framework that's presented, they might say, there's nothing here that I find problematic with the lower court. Look, I am personally, me individually, against the death penalty. Absolutely, 100%. I'm telling you right now, if I was a Supreme Court judge or a state court, and I was presented with the issue, has this particular death penalty case been handled correctly? Should it be reversed? I would say no. Let's assume there's nothing. There's nothing here legally for me to say something that was already approved by the legislature, by the citizens, which is not unconstitutional. No, even though I find it reprehensible. I believe that all drugs should be legal. Sometimes mandatory in some particular cases. I, as a judge, would not go back and say, you know what? I personally find marijuana law stupid. I would say, no, this arrest is okay. Judges.
Well, you got my vote for Supreme Court Justice Lionel. I think we should forget Judge Napolitano, and I think we should put Lionel in there because he's actually somebody. And we've had this conversation before. Whether you agree with marriage or not, it's like, is it in the Constitution that they get to decide? And unfortunately, we've had a lot of Supreme Court judges that have decided that they have that power. We're going to have more about this when we come back with Lionel. Stay with us. David Knight, as you listen to that ominous music, we'll talk about the people who truly are untouchable, and that's the Supreme Court. Once they get in there, you can't do anything to them. They're there for life. Till they get term limited by God, or they get tired of it one way or the other. We're talking to Lionel about the possible how Trump will pick is what we're going to talk about here. Maybe get some handicapping from Lionel. Before we do, real quickly, I remind you of the 4th of July Super Sale that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We call it the Second American Revolution 4th of July Super Sale. We have free shipping store-wide. We have many of our most popular products 50% off, things like Brain Force Plus, DNA Force Plus, The Real Red Pill Plus, Super Male Vitality, all those 50% off with free shipping. And we have some massive discounts on some very expensive products. We have DNA Force Plus, 50% off. It's a very expensive product to produce, one of our most expensive supplements. 50% off plus free shipping, a big dollar savings. A big dollar savings on Alexa Pure Breeze. That's our home air filter. That's $100 off with free shipping. And finally, we have InfoWars Life Select Storable Food. The 3-month supply is 50% off with free shipping. Take a look at the products that we have as part of our 4th of July super sale at InfoWars Store. We have massive discounts and free shipping store-wide. All right, let's go back to Lionel. Again, you can find him. Lionel Nation is his YouTube channel, and his Twitter handle is Lionel Media. Lionel, as we're talking about the qualifications for who should go on the Supreme Court, you and I just talked about this travel ban, they wanted to call it. Actually, it was just travel vetting. And it was seven nations, two of them not Muslim, and yet they called it a Muslim ban. I mean, the five Muslim nations that were there, Obama had gone to war with, and there's 50 different Muslim nations, so it wasn't a Muslim ban. 90% of the Muslim nations were not included in the extra vetting. But as you said, when we looked at it, you said they did it the right way. They said, number one, what does the Constitution say about the president's powers? Number two, what does this law say? And yet we still had some Supreme Court justices who said, but President Trump thinks this. Or President Trump said that, and they wanted to make the judgment based on that. So, I mean, what are we looking for here in terms of Supreme Court justice?
Well, it goes to show you, you don't know. Sotomayor, in particular, said basically that she was second-guessing not only what President Trump had said, but people like, I guess, Rudy Giuliani and others. What does that have to do with anything? It just goes to show you. And this is a very, very learned woman, obviously, who knows a little bit about what the heck she's talking about, one would think. But let me explain something also. People love to do this. Read the Constitution. David, have you ever read what's not in it? I mean, it is one of the most. I swear to you, I have this idea that if I could bring James Madison to say, sit down. Did you have anything about the Air Force? The what? The Air Force? No. Marriage. Congressional districts, paper money, right, this. I mean, they don't even have how many justices are in the Supreme Court. They don't have anything. It is void of so much stuff. They kind of figured, well, you'll get to this. And the Bill of Rights, which they had to cobble on later on because basically there were no protections. Look, here's one of the things that kills me. The court should never legislate from the bench. I love that idea. Thank God they do. Here's my favorite, Fourth Amendment. We all know, you know this, I know this, that if you see something, that the police break down your door, grab your whatever it is, and they say, aha, we've got the drugs, you can say, wait a minute, you can't use that in court. Why? You didn't have a warrant. You violated every tenet, every rule possible. You seized this information or this data. Granted, it's illegal, but you violated the Fourth Amendment. Now, if the courts were to say, well, where does it say in the Constitution I can't use this? What? Where does it say in the Constitution it just says you should have a warrant? What does it say when you don't have a warrant? It never says anything. So in 1961, the court legislated in the case Map Against Ohio, which said you can't use this. It's the exclusionary rule. I'm glad they have that. They were actually thinking seriously of maybe you can sue the police officer. What? Sue the police officer. If you've had your rights violated by virtue of evidence that was seized, and you would say, no, I'm David Knight. I'm going to prison. I don't want to sue him for money damages. I want to, you can't use this. And they would use, David, things like you would hear language if you read the history of this. Why should we let this criminal go because of the constable's error? The what? The constable's error. Now, we assume that to be true, but were it not for a legislative Supreme Court at the time who says, no, not that the justice or the forebears, our constitutional forefathers, the drafters, had thought this, what was in the original Constitution, a la Scalia, who, by the way, the deification of Scalia, I mean, he was great and everything, but he said some things that were just nuts.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't agree with everything anybody says. But, no. I mean, he was trying to get them back to where they actually looked at the law rather than saying, well, we have this living document, and it means whatever I say. I mean, you get to that point, you're in a dictatorship. We're talking about a search warrant. We have defined in the Constitution the fact that part of due process is having a search warrant. So if you start to get away from due process, then that means that the government is acting in a criminal manner. So I don't see that as much of a stretch as like the case I like to talk about, which let's talk about the First Amendment protection of filmmakers, since Hollywood likes to talk about this stuff. You know, the fact that we had the case we had back in the 19-teens, you know, this is when they're trying to get into World War I. I forget the exact year. A guy who does Spirit of 76, and Woodrow Wilson wants to censor it. He doesn't, so they put the filmmaker in jail. They give him a massive fine. The Supreme Court says films don't have a right to a First Amendment, and it stood like that for another four decades.
Nothing in the Constitution about that. It's like, what? Look, it's anything you want. Here's one for you, David. Let's say you're Justice Knight, I like the ring of that, and you say, listen, if you want to have abortion as a right, pass a law. What? Pass a law. You want to have gay rights, gay marriage? Pass a law that says you can do this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what about the other situation? Georgia, Virginia, whatever passes the law that says you can't get married. Oh, we'll pass another law. They don't want to pass a law. Then we go to this part. Is there something fundamentally constitutional about this right? You know, we could say, well, maybe not. The Constitution to people is this idea. It's like Big Brother. We have two expressions. There ought to be a law against that, and that's unconstitutional, meaning it's unfair. And there are some things that you, for example, you might not, you may have some indignity served upon you. You may be, I don't know what, but they may say, I'm sorry, Mr. Knight, you have no constitutional right to this. Now, if you can figure something out, in addition, wait a minute, you mean they can do this to you? It's not that they can, it's that there's nothing that prevents them from doing this. Now, that may seem contrary to people. Everybody has, David, this idea that somehow rights get filled in by common sense. You mean to tell me I can't join this club because I'm what? I can't join that. Wait a minute, just because I'm a woman, I can't be on the basketball team? Just because, well, if we, sometimes we'll say, I'm sorry, but you don't have a constitutional right. Why don't you go and try to talk people out of this stupid law? Why don't you go and create a press movement, a meme, a social media cavalcade, a firestorm of public opinion? Not everything is the Constitution. There are some horrible things that we have to go through where that's not fair, that's horrible, that's wrong, but it's not constitutional. And that drives people nuts because they think that there has to be this, it's like God or right versus wrong or the sense of what is normal. And the thing about it is that it's hard to tell somebody or use as their main bumper sticker, appoint me, President Trump, because I'm into restraint. I don't do a lot. I don't think the Constitution says as much as people say, hey, that's my kind of judge. Now, in the conservative realms, I could say somebody is that would be preferable because you know what? That is extremely wonderful. Restraint. But David, I'm telling you, there is stuff coming up right now that is going to defy not only the Constitution, but common sense. When we get into things like artificial intelligence versus cloning, versus the idea of patenting, taking something. Now, this goes back to intellectual property. Can I patent the BRCA 1 or 2 or 3 gene? Can I patent?
And I think part of this goes to the fact that we have Congress has abdicated their power to define this stuff. That's how we get into a lot of this ambiguity. They have abdicated their power to the Supreme Court or to the bureaucracy. You got a president who typically, we now have a tradition that the presidents defer to the Supreme Court because they don't want to get into a piece of hot water. I mean, we had Andrew Jackson who said, the Supreme Court's made their decision. Let's see them enforce it. But we don't have those types of people around anymore. That's where this is all coming from. Well, that's our program for today. Thank you, Lionel, for joining us. And that's our legal analysis for the day. And we're going to see what happens with President Trump's Supreme Court pick. And again, you can find Lionel on Twitter, Lionel Media.